Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
We're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, quiet sidekick.
And as is the new tradition with the slightly rejiggered format, we have a guest again, Dylan.
Our guest this week is not Kim.com because we don't like Germans. We got Vikram Kumar, the CEO of Mega.co.nz.
Hey, guys.
So, he's a resident, right? Well, this isn't about Kim. This isn't about Kim. No, why is he... Kim. We've got to somehow... This whole thing... No, let's not talk about Kim at all. We don't need to talk about Kim.
Okay, yeah, well, I think we'll brush past the subject a couple of times, but we'll try and keep it a relatively polar fleece-free zone.
All right. To keep this safe for the kids, I ran into an old friend of mine at the supermarket tonight, and it inspired me to get a bottle of something that I haven't had in a little while. The long-time listeners will probably know exactly the last time I had it, but I don't remember when I last did. It was probably during the show. I've got a bottle of Bernardino Spumante.
No, I don't remember discussing this before, and I'm pretty sure I would have mocked you for it.
That's this week's drink. Straight from the bottle, like a lady.
I have nothing. I am parched.
Mm.
I will not be hydrating during this entire show.
You should get yourself a glass of apple juice.
That would be difficult. I'd have to drive to the supermarket.
Haven't you got stuff like that for your kids?
No, they can drink water.
Anyway, hello, Vikram. How are you? Have you had a good week?
It's been an exciting time, that's for sure.
Has your company been slandered at all this week?
It's been really good, I think. You know, when you're in the thick of things, it doesn't sound that great, but you sort of sit back and think back and say, well, you know, good things did come out of it. And yeah, it wasn't of our making, but, you know, we made the best of it.
So shall we recap the story in as brief terms as possible? If you haven't heard of this situation, the best point at this stage, the best place at this stage to go and find out about it is on publicaddress.net.nz?
Publicaddress.net, I think.
Public address, you know where it is anyway.
Yeah.
Go there and read what Russell wrote about it. But essentially what happened is, what was it, on Friday this past week, illustrious blogger Whale Oil posted a screenshot, or a couple of screenshots, of e-books of the Luminaries, right? Is the
book the of Eleanor Catton Booker Prize winner. Yep.
The Luminaries being shared on mega.co.nz. And he stated that the links had been passed to him by some informant, and that they were being, and that Mega was facilitating the piracy of this New Zealand content. And then subsequently there was a press release from the Publishers Council, something like that, Publishers Association of New Zealand, that said much the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's where it's at. Mega tells us, I'm sure Vikram can clarify, but Mega tells us the links in question were not... certainly not widely dispersed. Obviously, we know nothing. The only links we saw were for a Mega download page, so we don't know if they were, you know, there's no picture of them being shared on piracy websites or anything like that.
So, obviously, Mega as a company have copyright scoff laws, and the fact that this link was up on their servers means that I expect there have been thousands of downloads of this ebook, the stolen ebook, and that's cost Eleanor dearly, Vikram.
So there's been exactly one download, which was the person who uploaded it downloaded it once, and that's about it.
That's good checking, because you need to make sure the file worked. You don't want to just put it up there and not double check that it works.
Okay, and there must be a really easy kind of some sort of directory function where you can go and browse through other users' files and see everything that they've got. And so, you know, you'd be able to find this just by fossicking around, right, this link to this document?
No, so Mega, as the privacy company, you know, one of the key differentiating points is this user-controlled encryption, which means that the person who uploads the file essentially encrypts it before giving it to Mega. So Mega doesn't know the name of the file, or it doesn't know what the file is.
Yeah.
And then the person who uploads it can either keep it private or can share it with a closed group or public.
Yeah.
And so... we just don't have the ability for someone to say, look, here's a file, or, you know, here's the name of a book or a movie. Go and look throughout your service, figure out where it is, and take all of them down.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, if you could do that, you'd delete things immediately. But seeing as you can't, even when people tell you that a file is not yours, you don't do anything about it.
Yeah, and so exactly the same file, you know, whether it's a video or a photograph or a document, if it's exactly the same file, if it's uploaded by two different people, it's encrypted differently because they've got individual encryption keys. And so it looks like a different file, or it looks like different encrypted bits. So we really don't have a situation where, you know, here's a file, go and find all the copies and remove all of them.
Now, that's interesting, because that was, as I understand it, and it's still ongoing, and we start to brush past Kim.com territory here, but as I understand it, that was one of the claims at the root of the Mega upload case, was that they provided a gateway, as it were, for content companies to issue, or to basically do automatic takedowns. So if they found links to their content, they could just paste those links in and get the files taken down. But I think in the case against Mega Upload, they've stated that because Mega Upload had a deduplication system which could identify, you know, when 2 or 3 or 4 or 600 users uploaded exactly the same file and store only one copy of it, that they should have, when being notified that one file was infringing, deleted all copies of that file. I think that's sort of part of the claim, and I find that fundamentally wrong, because I made an example on a public address comment post, which is I could go to Louis C.K. I really like what Louis C.K. is doing. I could go to Louis C.K.'s website and pay $5 and download his, say, Live at the Beacon video. And then I could store it on my Dropbox or Mega or any other cloud storage server. And it would be my copy of the file. And if I don't share it with anyone, as far as I could tell, I'm not breaking the law. It's just sticking it on a file, like if I put it on a USB stick. And if someone else did the same thing but then chose to share the link with everyone else, and then someone acting for Louis C.K. had a takedown issued, it would be unfair to take down my copy of the file if I wasn't infringing with it. That was, anyway, that was a comment I made that sort of pointed to the problem with expecting that all copies of a given file be taken down, because you can't.
That actually is an excellent example. So there would be sometimes when it was clear to the copyright owner that every copy was illegal, but it would be difficult for anyone else to be able to verify that. So, for instance, a film that hadn't been released even to cinemas yet, and suddenly there is a screener available. That is, every copy of that is going to be illegal.
Except, of course, if one of those screeners was uploaded by someone on behalf of the film company for a legitimate user to view and shared the link only once with a legitimate user. I've certainly shared files. I have shared content on sites like Vimeo and actually even Mega for that purpose. So again, it's that thing. Without knowing a lot about the person who uploaded the file and the file and who's accessing the file, you can't tell whether it's infringing or not.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key part, which is it's the copyright owner or their agent who really knows what's infringing and what isn't. And everybody else is just guessing. So unless we want an intermediary to make these subjective judgments, and we'll obviously get it wrong at times, I think the right course and the one that Mega follows is, hey, the person who owns this, you tell us and we'll take it down in good faith.
Yeah, exactly. And then also hopefully give the user in question an opportunity to dispute that in the off chance that there was a mistake made, which certainly happens a lot on YouTube. I know I've received copyright hits on YouTube for things that I had a legal right to use. I don't know if that happens with sites like Mega.
Not in our case. We don't follow what you'd call a notice and notice system.
Right.
The amount of copyright notices that we get is very small. It's about 100 a day. When we take them down, we notify the person that we've taken them down, and that gives the opportunity for the person to dispute it if they want to.
Right.
Has anyone ever disputed it and got the content put back?
No.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the people who are using it that way don't really care if the file is taken down. They'll just either upload it again or just move on with their lives and do something else.
Have you ever, can you say if you've ever had a warrant served for user information?
We've had, and so what we decided to do was to publish transparently our policy so that everyone knows how Mega acts under different circumstances.
Yeah.
And the brief summary of that is, we looked around and said, one of the biggest problems that I see right now in New Zealand is that ISPs, banks, everybody else, they get these requests from the police or law enforcement to hand over user information. And recognize that these are only requests. And the ISP or the bank hands it over and are protected under the Privacy Act, but they don't have to. So Mega said, as the privacy company, we want to raise the bar and we'll hand over user information only when we are required to do so, as opposed to requested to do so. So whenever we get a request, we go back and ask them to either get a court order or get a what's called a production order, something that requires us to hand it over. Now, that's not because we want to be difficult. That's because you can then be assured that a due process has been followed,
yeah,
that some third party has had a look at it and said, yep, go ahead. So it stops these phishing expeditions. It stops the ability for police and law enforcement to ask for information just in case it's required.
So there's suspicion of, there's this suspicion of Mega because it follows Mega Upload and because it involves Kim.com, who is clearly controversial. And no matter how strong you think his case is, and frankly, I think it's reasonably strong, it was clear that Mega Upload at least profited in some way from the illicit use that it saw. That obviously doesn't seem to be true for Mega.co.nz, right? The only way you profit from me, as far as I can tell, is if I pay you money. Is that right?
Yeah, so
there's no advertising involved or anything. There's no banner ads.
Now, the statistics is 435 million files have been uploaded to Mega in the 9 months it's launched. And the number of copyright notices we've got against those files is 0.05%. So 99.95% of the files that are uploaded to Mega will never get a copyright notice. So it's not a service which is widespread copyright infringement happening. You know, the bulk of it is absolutely legal.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the monetization, Mega's got the business strategy of trying to grow the number of people who are using the service as quickly as possible. And so we've tried to do everything to make the experience really good. It's been independently tested to be the fastest cloud storage service in the world. No advertising, clean interfaces, apps coming out. There's an Android app, an iOS app is coming out soon. And our whole goal right now is to try and grow the service. So there's no advertising, no data collection. All of it is a simple, get 50 gigabytes free. And if you want more space, then it starts at 500 gigabytes at 10 euros a month, which is a global scale competitiveness.
Is there limits on file? Because I seem to recall at some point there was limits on the number of, the amount of traffic that could be served from a single download link.
Yeah, so each of the paid plans has double the amount of bandwidth. So the 500 gigabyte plan comes with 1 terabyte per month of bandwidth. In the same way, there's the 1 terabyte and the 2 terabytes. So there's a combination of storage limit and bandwidth limit.
Yep. So, like, it strikes me that compared to Mega Upload or say something like what is it called?
Rapid Share.
Yeah. Mega doesn't have the same inducement to encourage. Like, Mega doesn't benefit if lots of people are downloading files, right? So it doesn't. There's no. Like, people say that Kim.com being an evil pirate overlord is encouraging people to use Mega as an evil pirate site, but I can't see that would be the case. It seems ridiculous to suggest that. There's no, as if I uploaded pirate files to Mega, A, it's not the best service for them. It's fast, but frankly, I run out of bandwidth quite quickly if I do that, I think. And B, it just ends up costing Mega money, so there's no, you know, you're serving my files and I'm not paying you money because I can just make more 50 gigabyte accounts for my pirated West Wing episodes.
So and also the direction that Mega's taking is quite different from the services you've mentioned. Right now, we're a cloud storage and much more a collaboration company. But the future very much is communication. So encrypted messaging, chat, voice, video, all in the browser. And you know, the goal is very much how do we bring privacy to everyone who doesn't have technical skills or even the interest necessarily. And so Mega's designed to be a service that provides privacy automatically, no downloads, no plugins. That's fundamentally quite a different goal and business model from pure file hosting companies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's not like a file locker. It is like it's a cloud storage. It's different. It's different in structure and form. I just don't. Yeah, I think the people who assume that it is some sort of piracy haven really don't understand it. It seems bizarre. There was an interesting thing that I noticed because I came to the launch at the Mega Mansion, and as soon as I saw it, there was an interesting point. I think I had slightly early access. I think I had beta access a couple of weeks before that. But as soon as I started playing with it, there was an interesting point. It strikes me to make a fantastic content distribution platform, because you can essentially copy, like, if I get a mega.co.nz link, I have two options, right? I can download it to my computer, easy, or I can import it into my own Mega storage hot box. Is that right?
Yep. And a really good example of that is a photographer who has uploaded his entire collection to Mega, and does that because A, it gives him cheap storage, and second, it's encrypted and so it's secure. And then he sells the photographs and provides encrypted links individually to photographs that people can then import into their Mega account, which I think is an example of your distribution.
Yeah.
But it also shows that far from helping infringe IP, Mega is actually a really good IP protection system when the content owner wants to have it in the cloud but keep it secure.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could issue one-time keys for files. Because I was thinking, if you were, let's say, a movie company, like, this is what I thought literally as soon as I saw it, if you were a movie company, you could put your movies on there, and your purchase thing could be as simple as, okay, I want this now, dump it in my Mega storage. And it takes next to no time at all. You don't have to download it right then and there. You can just have it in your storage box from that point onwards. That just seems like a fantastic option. I don't think anyone else does anything quite like that.
So did you mean like a time-limited?
Well, no, I suppose you could do that as well. I mean, probably there's all sorts of potential things. But just in terms of that being able to just cross-import it instead of download it, and then, you know, like if I were to buy a file from iTunes, I have to download it to my computer, and then if I want to store it on my Mega account or my Dropbox or whatever, I have to upload it back up to there. Whereas if I could just, you know, hit the purchase button and have the file just turn up in my Mega account, and then I could do with it whatever I wanted later on. Just have a copy of it there. It seems quite cool. But yeah, this whole piracy book thing is bizarre.
It's bizarre mainly because of the claims that were made around the discovery of the link to the ebook, and the impossible reality of those claims, and the repeated insistence that everyone who is suspicious of Cameron Slater is incorrect, and the insinuations that anyone who thinks that there's something shady going on is wrong. And whenever anyone else is wrong, he always says, you're always wrong. You've been previously wrong.
I'm certain if the tables were turned, if someone else had presented something and then there was information that suggested that only one person had downloaded said file, I don't think Cam would take anyone's word for it. But
no.
That's cool. We'll just leave that. I mean, the assertions that have been made, Cameron Slater is adamant that he downloaded the files to verify that they were what they said they were. And Vikram's telling us that only one person ever downloaded the files, and that was the person who uploaded them.
Now, Vikram, you probably can't actually say. I am interested to know, and just say if you can't say. I'm interested to know if you are judging that it was the same person who uploaded and downloaded based on the Omega account, or if it was IP address. But it's a privacy company. You probably can't say.
Yeah, let me just give you the sequence of events. On Monday the 21st, which is 8 days ago, an account was created. 3 days later, on 21st, the account was created, and these two files were uploaded into that account. So a new account, two files uploaded.
Yeah.
On the 24th, which is the Thursday, Cameron Slater in the Whale Oil blog provided those two screenshots. Now, what I did, I came across it because I happened to be on Twitter in the morning. I saw a tweet which referred to something about files being available on Mega. Went to Whale Oil's blog, saw the screenshots, and you know he had had partially covered over the URLs, but I could see from the screenshots that the first part of the links, at least in one case, was very clear. The other one was almost there. And without waiting for a notice, I asked our tech team to locate those files and take them down. Now, we then started having a look, and we found a couple of things that were quite different in this case than what we typically see in copyright infringement allegations. The first is that the email address, which is a requirement when opening with Mega, was at best what one could call a temporary email address. It was based on I would imagine it's based on an email address that is used full time, but based on that, this person got a temporary email address which they used. They used proxy services to VPN and hide their IP address. And what we could make out was that that same VPN and the same IP address was the only one that uploaded the file, downloaded the file, and has never used Mega in any other way at any other point of time. Logs confirmed that that file was never downloaded by anyone else.
That is hilarious. So they were trying to cover their tracks. They were trying to conceal their identity and make sure that they couldn't be geographically located. And they have, I mean, we can't go too far with conjecture about exactly what happened, but you can draw your own conclusions, listeners. I mean, come on, only one person uploaded it and downloaded it. And Cameron Slater claims that he found it. And did he say that he had looked at it as well, Dylan?
He did.
And he said himself that he had downloaded it. Only one person downloaded it, and it was the same IP that uploaded it. Draw your own conclusion.
So something
shady is going on.
So I have a question. In the screenshots, I'm just looking at them now. One of them clearly has, because I understand the structure of a Mega URL, the first, was it like 8 characters or something, is the file, and the if it has more than that on it, then that's the encryption key. Is that correct?
The decryption key, yeah.
Sorry, the decryption key, yes.
Yeah.
I can see one of them, one of the two files clearly has that first part visible, but the second one, the first one doesn't seem to. Were you still able to find it?
Yeah, and most of it is because it was the only two files in the same account.
Oh, I see, of course. So once you knew the account, you could see that there were two files there, and obviously, yeah, that makes sense.
All right, and just to be clear, there was no way for you to know what the material was without actually accessing it, just like any other end user would access it.
Right, and because the decryption key part of the screenshot was obscured, Mega couldn't actually look at the files before taking them down.
Okay.
So, in a sense, we relied on the blog post to be accurate and prayed like hell that we weren't taking down some genuine files, but that was the risk that we took.
You can put them back after you take them down, can't you? If someone contacts you and said, you took down my doctoral thesis, you can untake it down.
Yeah, but it's not good practice.
Yeah, of course. You don't want to go smashing people's stuff without good reason.
You know, like I said, it's only the copyright owner who should have told us that this is an illegal file. It's not fair. It's not fair dealing. It's not any other permitted use. Just because a file is up doesn't mean necessarily infringing copyright. And I suppose the funny thing is that we've never even till now, actually ever got a formal notice from the copyright owner or their agent to take it down.
Right, and you're never going to, because they had never seen it and they had never downloaded it to verify it, because we know, apparently, that only one person had done that. So you're never going to get that notice.
Well, and they've said they never downloaded it, or at least one person from involved said they never downloaded it. Like one of the, you know, publishing type people, non whale oil people.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. So this,
I think this is another Cameron Slater involved own goal, just like with the whole Len Brown thing. But even kind of more hilarious, because it was his own gun and he made the bullet.
Yes, which is exactly, I expect no less from him. I see, and another question, I mean, there obviously is piracy that takes place on Mega.co.nz, as there is on Dropbox, for that matter, and Google Drive. I've seen pirate links to Google Drive files as well. Anywhere, I guess anywhere you can put a file on the internet and share the link to that file with someone else is going to attract that usage.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the question is how much, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't... But there's a few people on the public address forum and elsewhere, especially on Twitter on the Friday when the story sort of broke into the mainstream a bit, were saying Mega should do more. And, you know, and I've asked a couple of people, you know, what more should they do? And no one can tell me, because I can't see how you could be more proactive. I mean, as long as you're legitimately responding to complaints from copyright holders, I can't understand how it would be possible to be more proactive, unless you have someone whose job it is to somehow inspect every file that's uploaded. I mean, assuming there wasn't the encryption, to somehow inspect every file that's uploaded and do background research on the person who uploads it to try and figure out whether they're allowed to or not, because there doesn't seem to be a better way.
Yeah, and I'd come back to the statistics. You know, 0.05% of the files get a copyright notice. That's a really, really small number compared to any other cloud service out there. So it's really a question of perception. And we keep really close eye on making sure of what that number is. And on a daily basis, we get something like 3 million files uploaded and 100 takedown notices. And we process them manually. Right. That's a level that I'm quite comfortable with. Now, I'm not saying that those, you know, trying to play down that there were 100 files and that potentially there are some people who are being damaged. But I just want, you know, the perspective here is that by, you know, for the vast majority, it's all good. And yes, there's going to be these exceptions where things go wrong. And it's almost like, was it like Harvey Norman who said it's the fixing or putting right that counts?
Right.
And so that's what we focus on is, you know, we don't delay takedown notices or delay taking down once we get the notice. I'm not sure we can do much more.
So I have a query. At least there's one service I know of, which I won't name, but there's one like search engine for it specifically specializes in indexing, well, not indexing, I guess, but curating links to Mega files that are. You know, I guess the majority of them appear to be probably pirated content. Do you take any effort to try and deal with those sites, or are they just, you just have to wait for a copyright notice to come in? Because again, without, you know, actually going through all of those things, it's hard to say what the legal situation on any given file listed in that website is. But it says currently that it's got 391,000 files indexed. It doesn't say, I mean, as far as I can tell, there's no way to tell whether any of those files are still up.
We do try, but you know, just to be quite clear, it's not the legal duty of Mega or any internet intermediary to go searching throughout the internet and find these sites. But we do try, and people do tell us, and we follow up. So in one case, we were able to close it down because they were misusing the Mega logo. In another case, we asked the person under legal direction to put up a big sign saying that this site isn't linked with mega.co.nz, not endorsed, not supported. And there's a bit of a legal question on what can Mega actually do in another jurisdiction if such a indexing site comes up. And it's much easier if they are either contravening our trademark or passing off that it's a mega site. But if they are completely legit,
30 minutes.
It's actually quite hard to do much about it, but we do our best.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's, covered all the mega stuff.
All right. I'm satisfied with that. Now, I have another question about your past life working as chief executive of Internet New Zealand.
You should throw the word illustrious in there.
Illustrious. So it looks like this proposal to do away with 2LDs in New Zealand and just go to .nz is maybe going to go ahead, probably going to go ahead. I'm interested to know if this is something that was ever mooted when you were chief executive, what you think about the change, challenges, advantages.
Okay, it's reasonably simple because Internet NZ, when I was there, the structure of the group is that .nz is handled completely independently and separately.
Yeah.
And for good reason. And that's because you make sure you get the best expert advice and there's no conflict of interest.
Yeah.
So the Domain Name Commission Limited, essentially, as a subsidiary of Internet NZ, looked after .nz. The final call was made by the council of Internet NZ, but the staff of Internet NZ have never been involved in the .nz discussions.
Yeah.
So just to clear that, I've got no particular involvement before or later. Now, in terms of my personal viewpoint now, it's quite clear that the top-level domain space is changing very rapidly. Next 1 or 2 years, people are going to get really confused. What they've used to be seeing as .com or .co.nz is suddenly going to be .anything.
Yeah.
And because there's going to be, maybe 1,400 or 1,500 of them, people will not be able to make out whether .whatever is legit or not. And there's going to be, I think, a lot of marketing opportunities. At the same time, there's going to be a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
So I see both sides of the .nz debate. One was, well, everyone's moving to a flat structure. Give people the choice. The other side of the discussion was, in a world which is rapidly changing, because we are where we are, why not provide that stability and not open up the .nz to accusations of making more money from .nz at the expense of people who've already registered. So I'm not sure that there's actually a straight, clear one side or the other. I just see both sides.
Right. Okay. Well, I feel like it's a good move. I don't see any particular need for .gen.nz to still exist. And there aren't really...
no one uses .gen.nz.
I know someone who still has a .gen. I think it was insane that .geek was ever created. Yeah, sure, it was democratic. But it was democratic, and it was by the same people who had only moments before blocked the creation of, I think, .bank.nz. So it was completely hypocritical. And yes, I did get one, and I am a little bit ashamed of myself. And I think they're terrible domains, .geek.nz. And meanwhile, .nz... I actually find to be an aesthetically very pleasing portion of a domain, and all the bits in front of it unpleasing. So I think doing away with them.
It's going to make there's going to be lots of opportunities for those sort of novelty domains as well.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. We've got mega.co.nz. Now, that registration was after the cutoff period for us to participate in getting mega.nz.
Right. Oh, so you don't get the protection.
No, and so we're going to get to a situation where presumably somebody might get mega.nz. We've got mega.co.nz. Somebody can come along with mega.whatever.nz. And I think it's different if you were starting with a clean sheet of paper.
Yeah.
It's much harder when you've got to figure out what to do with people who've already got those third-level domain names.
So there we go. The official word from the former chief executive of Internet New Zealand is that we should have a slash and burn approach. We should delete the entire New Zealand domain name structure and have a gold rush on day one.
That sounds awesome. I remember I remember the Gold Rush. I don't know if you remember it, Morgan, but there was a specific date when they allowed swear words in the .nz namespace. And I was the assistant DNS administrator at iHug at the time, and I set up for myself some cron jobs to go, because we had a Perl script that would fire off domain registrations automatically.
Those were the days.
Cron job set up that like 2 minutes past midnight on that night would try and register a bunch of swear words.
Man, it is so much harder to snipe a domain these days. It's not just a Perl script on a cron job. That's for damn sure.
I got fucker.net.nz, which I had for a couple of years.
And you let it go.
I couldn't be bothered.
Oh, you lunatic.
It's probably still unregistered. I don't think anyone else bothered with it after that.
No. I really like, when was the DNC set up? I really like New Zealand's approach. The DNC Org NZ, it's a site that I regularly use. I actually use that search probably more than any other for searching for domain name availability and expiration time, just because I don't believe that anyone is going to be tracking that search and using it for nefarious purposes. Like,
oh, there's nothing worse than searching for a domain name and then going back to register it like 6 hours later and finding out it's been parked.
Exactly. And that's because you searched for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's one of the many reasons that I like having real people in the DNC who actually are sane and not a bunch of, you know.
Fucker.co.nz is available if you want to register.
Is it? No.
Well. I redirected it. When I first registered, I had it redirected to go to Telecom's website, I think, which is probably a bad idea given who I was, but whatever.
And the other good thing about the .nz structure is it's independent from government and it's independent from corporate interests.
Yeah.
So I think that's really comforting. And New Zealand's, you know, one of the few that it's got set up in that way, where it's not making profit for a shareholder, or it's not beholden to government. And so we're really lucky to have that structure where we can have at least have the confidence that it's being run for the interest of the community rather than a narrow interest.
That's just what they want you to believe.
Yeah, them.
Yeah, them, the powers that be.
The mysterious other. So are there any conflicting registrations for Mega that will beat MegaCoNZ to the punch for MegaNZ?
I think there are, but the main thing is the cutoff date.
Yeah.
And so anyone who's... I haven't looked at it 100%. I'm still going on the basis of what I think I saw a while back.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something that we have to think about. And the other thing that we're thinking about is we've got 0.7% of our customer base in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And we're beginning to get a lot of people asking us, what is this .co.nz? Don't quite understand. And from an international perspective, the disadvantages of being .nz are beginning to grow. Right. So
let me guess, you're going to register. You're going to pay them huge cost to get .mega?
We can't do that. I think that if we could, we would.
Yeah.
But, you know, that window's not there. One of the things we are looking at is we've opened up a subsidiary in Iceland.
Right.
And looking at mega.is.
Right.
And then potentially... You know, as the new top-level domains roll out, we'll have a look at those too. But
so nothing, nothing in Gabon.
Well, I think that was a failed attempt before I joined, so that was the end of that.
Yeah, they have a pretty strong second-level structure. It looks like.
How did the song go? M E G A. We want your files today. I don't even remember.
Was that a thing?
No, I don't remember.
Oh.
Well, it sounds like a new campaign for us. Thank you.
Yeah, well, get .com down in the Roundhead Studios to record a new slogan. we all love that dulcet singing voice.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's quite good at playing computer games. Not so good at singing.
At the mansion?
No, I wasn't, and deliberately so, because
you were in talks then.
I had left Internet New Zealand, and Kim had asked me to join. I hadn't made up my mind. I was probably leaning towards a no. And so... turning up there would have been uncomfortable because I'd have to lie to people on why I'm there.
It's also just as well, because if you'd been there and seen the craziness that was, you might have changed your mind.
No, I did watch remotely.
Oh, my God. That was one of the more memorable nights of my life. So peculiar, but fun. And the snacks were great. Cocktails were quite good. counts for a lot.
So I think it's quite clear from talking to you that if you had been in charge of policy at Mega Upload, times would have been a lot less exciting and there would not be nearly as much trouble on the horizon for good old Kim.
It's interesting, though, when you think about it, you look at what they did. I mean, they did the things, it seems they did the things that the law strictly required them to do.
Yeah.
It's just that some people have decided that what the law strictly required them to do and what they should have done weren't necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
And to be fair, there isn't ever been a criminal copyright infringement case plus extradition. You know, there's a whole lot of law.
And racketeering. Don't forget racketeering and money laundering.
Yeah, but that's because, you know, they've had to make it a criminal case to allow for extradition. There's never been a criminal copyright case like that, certainly one that they've never won. And it's extraordinary in many respects.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the whole insanity with the helicopters, you know, flying in with machine guns and black-clad ninjas running around kicking in doors. I think all of that by itself should see the whole thing get thrown out, because we don't need our police force acting like a paramilitary goon squad, a group of thugs and cowboys. And I think that the best way to discourage them from behaving like that is for our courts to send them a really clear message that if you act completely disproportionately, your case, regardless of the merits of the case, will actually get thrown out. Because that was ludicrous. That was nuts. Yeah. That didn't feel like my New Zealand.
Well, it certainly felt like Hollywood. So,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of a direct connection there.
Oh my God. Imagine the irony if there is even like a Hollywood studio produced movie of the whole thing.
There'll be explosions going off and rockets being fired.
No, but
fired
just the irony
in.
Of Hollywood making that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be fantastic.
Who's going to compose the music?
I think we know the answer to that.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've talked a lot about this. Have we got any other, random internet ravings we should discuss?
I have, you want actually specific internet things?
Well, no, not necessarily specific.
I have one story. So,
but, Vikram's an internet futurist.
A woman was found dead.
Oh, God.
And the police say that it's likely that she died from a single gunshot wound to the head. Now, the fact that she was shot in the head should give them a strong hint in that direction, really, shouldn't it? These people are not, they're not Sherlock Holmes exactly, are they? Let's see. Dead woman.
That's what they think she appeared to have died from.
Yeah, dead woman. Yeah. Hole in the head. Dead. Let's see. What is it?
If you watch enough criminal process dramas on TV, what you'll learn is they actually executed her with a powerful top secret drug, because it was the government that did it. And then they shot her in the head to cover that up.
That must be what it is.
Or she was watching too many PowerPoints.
Yeah, that shot herself.
I saw a PowerPoint presentation. I may have mentioned this on the show before because it sticks with me. I saw a PowerPoint presentation on an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
I went to, there was a thing, they're like, hey, come and see this free movie. I was like, all right. And then they're like, hey, before you watch this movie, we're going to show you this PowerPoint presentation. No. There's a sales presentation on an IMAX screen.
So in good news, for Aucklanders anyway, Auckland has been named, I think, like the 10th best city in the world by Lonely Planet for 2014. The rest of New Zealand have absolutely lost their fucking minds.
Vikram, you are in Wellingtonian. Is that still correct?
That's still right. One of my things when I was looking for a new job was to hope and try and stay in Wellington. Though when you look at the bloody wind here, sometimes you wonder why.
Well, Auckland is better. I'm just putting that out there. It's objective. It's a fact.
Yeah.
We don't make this stuff
independently
up.
Verified. That's
independently
science.
Verified.
the number
the same,
one.
The same thing. Does that also, where does it put Las Vegas? Just as a, I'm just curious.
I don't actually have the entire list, but I would presume that Las Vegas would be somewhere up in the thousands. the number one city, and I completely agree, is Paris.
Never been there.
Yeah, and I have, and it is just the most wonderful place. It is the most wonderful place. Let's see, is Barcelona in the top 10? No, pretty great as well. The second place is Trinidad, Cuba.
What is that?
I don't know. I thought, I mean, I've heard of like Trinidad and Tobago. And so I guess like Trinidad is an island in the Caribbean. But I didn't know it was part of Cuba. Is it part of Cuba? Or is this just a really badly written NZ Herald thing? Trinidad is a town. Oh, it's a town in Cuba. There we go. So it's actually correct. Wow, well, the Americans must be angry about that, though.
What is this? This is the number, the top what?
The number two best city in the world. Trinidad and Cuba. Yeah.
Wow. A city in Cuba is the number two best city in the world.
Yeah, it must be lovely. And I bet it has socialized healthcare, which would also make the Americans really angry. It's like communism or something. Yes, it's Cuba, dickhead. Congratulations, dickhead. That whole fuss over this Obamacare thing.
Oh, God.
It's nuts. Now, okay, so you could say a thing or two about the website being shit. But these people who think it's communist for there to be a marketplace for people to buy insurance.
Have you not read anything by Marx? His clear goal was to have the government enforcing consumers to buy a product from private sellers. That was the goal.
Isn't it bizarre? That's bizarre. How is that communism?
It's entirely clear to me that no one in the States, no political commentator, professional or layperson, i.e. Fox News viewer, has any concept of what communism is. None.
No, they've got no idea.
Anything that... Oh, just, yeah, anyway, I've read, I do not get involved in, but I've read a number of comments from people, you know, on the internets about Obamacare and what it is and isn't, and why those people are insane.
Yeah. Speaking of like socialism or whatever, I don't know, New Zealand Police Force? I don't know, we all pay for it, right? So it must be, there must be communism in there somehow. Labour weekend's record low road toll, one person died.
He ruined it.
One person, that's incredible.
That's not a very nice thing to say about someone who died in a tragic car accident, but he ruined it.
And I tell you what, so I drove a little bit, I drove over to Coromandel and back, and it was, you know, it was a little bit slow going because of the nutters who... Now, here's one thing that they should do on Labour weekends. Close all overtaking lanes.
When I've done some of the quite big holiday weekends, when I've come back, you know, with all the traffic coming back from up north and stuff, they often do cone off all the passing lanes because it's just idiots.
They
try and pass
traffic. And some of them were closed. But so what we had was we went from going at a smooth 90 in a 90 zone. We had all these people get overexcited when there was a passing lane. And then at the merge, after the passing lane, everyone was going 20 and could proceeded to go 20 for the next several kilometres because of these dickheads who weren't satisfied with going the speed limit. It was swear word believable. I tell you what. Thing that was amazing, though, we were coming up to, I don't even know what the name of the turnoff is. You go, the road that goes from up the peninsula, and then there's a T-junction with the road that goes to Tauranga out east and back to State Highway 1 out west. And approaching it, there were like warning signs for roadworks up ahead, and it was like, oh god damn them, why did they do that now? And then there was the big truck with the arrow, and they'd like closed off half of the road. And then there was a guy with a stop go sign, and let me tell you what they'd done. They'd closed off one lane, and they had this guy stopping the traffic that was traveling eastbound and making them wait for all the people coming down from Coromandel Peninsula, then smoothly dovetailing us into the massive traffic coming from Tauranga. And then every now and then he was letting the people who were travelling east back to Tauranga go. And it was so good.
So it wasn't roadworks?
It wasn't. There were no roadworks. There were signs for roadworks. And then there were no roadworks. There was just one dude making everything work smoothly. It was just absolutely brilliant. It was the most genius bit of foresight, planning.
You should bring that guy here and put him in charge of traffic lights.
I want to buy him all of the beers.
All right, well.
Assuming he drinks
holiday weekend, I'm sure you can.
One guy standing there, and he was making everything work smoothly, and it was so clever, and it was so simple, and it was perfect. It made me, like when I saw those roadworks signs, I was like, oh, god damn you assholes. And then when I saw what was actually happening, man, I was singing their praises for the rest of the way. Tell you what, it was a great weekend actually on the roads. Good work. And that's how we get down to one death. Except for these people who overtake. Don't overtake. There's no reason. Slow down. Leave earlier. That's it. Take it easy.
I drove to Matakana in the weekend. I was quite surprised. Normally, you know, that especially that bit of motorway from like Albany up to basically the tunnels.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a speedy bit of motorway.
I love that bit of road.
Yeah, everyone was doing 100.
Yep.
They were actually obeying that, and it didn't feel like you were going slow.
No.
Everyone was doing that speed. It's not, you know, not like the one guy who was trying to do 130 in the fast lane.
Yeah.
It was all good.
Yeah. I love that bit of road. And I'm very happy to pay whatever it is, $4 or whatever.
$2.20.
$2.20. $2.20! Have you finally got it out of your system, being angry with having to pay?
No, I've never been angry with having to pay. I've been angry at how difficult they make it in some ways. Well, yeah. It's easy to forget. And once you do forget, there's like, I don't know if there still is, there used to be this window of time where if you didn't pay initially, then they issued you a notice telling you to pay. But if you hadn't got the notice yet, you couldn't pay.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't just enter your registration anymore. Now you had to also enter the reference number from the notice.
So what they needed to do, of course,
was just take your damn money whenever you needed it.
That's number one. And number two, if you had ever paid before, they would remember your email address and just let you know, hey, have you forgotten? You should go and do it now. Yeah, like once upon a time.
It's so easy to forget.
You will remember that once upon a time, the first you knew that you had forgotten to pay your credit card was when you got a charge against it. Now they send you a text or whatever. It's like, hey, yeah, just by the way.
Hey, your payment's coming up. Oh, but don't mind this if you've already paid. I was like, I have, but thanks.
Yep. So a couple of months ago.
I've got an Urban Dictionary word of the something.
Urban Dictionary Discuss Weekly Show.
Urban Dictionary word of the week.
This better be clean, Dylan.
All right, Vicar, I'm going to explain the game. Are you familiar with urbandictionary.com?
Nope.
Okay, it's a website that defines alternative words.
Okay.
A lot of times they're, or phrases, a lot of times they're horrifically rude.
They use a submitted definitions.
And very sexual. We try and avoid those because we've had some incidents.
Yeah.
Anyway, the word I'm going to suggest is hand me up. Your job is to explain what the word might mean. So the word is hand me up, or the phrase is hand me up.
Okay. Sounds like Cameron Slater would use that word quite a bit. And it's his way of putting his hand out to get more people to visit his blog.
I can think of other words for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be able to guess.
So now, obviously, there is the phrase hand me down, and that's where the younger sibling gets their older sibling's clothes or their older cousin's clothes. So I guess that this is I know what this is. So this is mothers who act completely out of their age appropriate group, and they try to dress like their young daughters, including wearing their clothes. That's what hand me up is.
That would be awesome. It is also not that. Hand me up is where the young generation in the family adopts or purchases new technology, a new technology product at a fast rate, and the old versions of that product, still working but not up to current standards, are handed up to older generations of the family.
That's fantastic. So,
you get a new smartphone, you give your old smartphone to your parents.
I've done that with so many computers to my mother.
Exactly. It's hand me up. Brilliant. I really like it. I've got one more as well.
Discuss Weekly Show!
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Go on.
This one is premature exasperation.
Yeah. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
So this is when you know that something absolutely frustrating that you do not want to happen is about to happen, and you start to express your disgust, and then that doesn't happen, and actually everything's fine.
Moderately close.
Premature exasperation.
To me, this is when a blogger writes some stuff. You know it's wrong if he would just listen.
I think we've found an issue for you.
There's a trend.
There is a trend. You're actually both kind of close in a way. Premature exasperation is becoming upset about something before knowing all or any of the details.
Right.
Pretty common in the media today. To be honest, they're pirating New Zealand content.
What will poor Eleanor do?
Well, she'll probably do better now because there's even more news articles about her work.
I tell you what, there is no chance in hell that I'm ever reading that book because it is too long.
How long is it?
850 something pages. And it is, I am not interested in a period, sort of a semi-historical, fictionalized thing. I'm not interested in that at all. Those are the worst part of the Ian M. Banks books when he goes into like historical war stuff. I hate it.
Can't be that big. I mean, the EPUB's only 1.2 megs, apparently.
Is there any compression going on in EPUB format?
I know no idea.
How many characters is 1. Something megs?
Okay, there must be some compression. It's also that the EPUB is 1.2 megs, but the dot MOBI was 2.6 megs. So it's clearly less efficient.
Right.
That's all I know about electronic books is nothing.
All you know about electronic books is nothing? Is that what you just said?
Yep.
Yep, so that joins the queue then with everything else.
I'll add that to the list of stuff I don't know anything about.
Don't know anything about that.
Podcasting.
Don't know anything about that.
Arranging guests in a timely fashion.
Oh my God, speaking of...
Thank you, Rickon, for joining us with very little notice, by the way.
No, it's good to have had this opportunity to talk. It's timely.
Yeah, well, that was a thing. We're trying to keep ourselves topical.
Also timely. You'll remember that about this time, 2 years ago, at University of California, Davis, there was a police lieutenant wearing like a riot helmet and a baggy outfit, walking along a row of peaceful protesters sitting on a university path. And he walked along
the Occupy protest, wasn't it?
He walked along this row of peaceful protesters sitting down with his fire extinguisher sized orange tinted pepper spray, and he sprayed all of those protesters in the face with great force at close distance. His name was John Pike.
Are we sure it was pepper spray and not just like one of those light mists of water for a hot day?
Well, he's described as the pepper spray officer.
Okay.
Maybe it was a refreshing, minty, fresh freshness that they got from that pepper spray. So he's just been awarded over $38,000 in compensation for the suffering that he experienced after that incident, where he tortured those people with a chemical weapon. That's a little bit of hyperbole, but obviously it is a chemical weapon. And after his terrible misbehavior, his suffering was that people told him that he had behaved poorly in emails and calls and letters and so on.
Who was he awarded the money from?
I think from UC Davis themselves.
Oh, okay.
The university had to pay him. Yeah, okay. The university had to pay him.
And did the victims of this, did they get awarded anything?
They actually, I believe they actually did. Now, I don't have to hand exactly how much they got, but I believe that they did get some kind of settlement. I don't know that it added up individually to each of them on average to as much as the officer did. But he was the perpetrator of a terrible crime. And it's pretty shameful that he got a payout, because I don't think if you behave this badly with it's not a baton, but it's still violence. Spraying a chemical irritant into people's faces with the force that the device he was using sprayed them. That is a pretty nasty assault, frankly. If someone walked up to you on the street and they did that to you, you would say that you'd just been assaulted, I think.
Actually, in terms of other ridiculous, well, I don't know if it's ridiculous because I don't really know any details about it, but other apparently ridiculous lawsuit issues.
Yeah.
I saw a thing today that apparently Briscoe's.
Oh, that's so funny. That was my next story.
Has been fined $75,000.
Yeah.
Plus reparations after a customer tripped over a box in the aisle of a Briscoe store.
Yeah, seriously. Come on, use your eyes. You've got two eyes and two legs.
I don't understand. There must be other information about this. I'm looking at the article. There doesn't seem to be much more useful information, but there must be more information to this that makes them somehow more culpable than they would be for having steps, for example.
Yeah.
Things that customers should be expected to be able to see and avoid.
Anyway. So do we expect to see a big rush to Briscoe's anytime soon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When they have the next sale, everyone will go.
But you can't, because in New Zealand we have ACC. You can't sue for this kind of injury.
No.
Under normal circumstances. So it's pretty weird that...
You can only take some you can sue for some things that that aren't covered by SEC, which is certain. But five. Even then, the amount of money is pretty limited. We've reached the end of the show.
Four.
Vikram Kumar, thank you so much for joining us. It was great hearing about your side of the story with Mega. Dylan, once again.
One.
I'm here.
Yeah, I also have been Morgan, and I'll see you next time when I will still be Morgan. Goodbye, sorry. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
All right, we're using that one.
All right, easy. Easy is easy. So update on the Bernardino Spumante. I have approximately 1/5 of a bottle remaining.
So yeah, you definitely shouldn't record any more podcasts for a while.
I'm banned from driving for the rest of the night.
That's very good. You should basically be banned from driving after about probably a fifth of the bottle.
No.
Oh, I don't know. It's just safe than sorry. Don't drink, and you don't drink anything, then drive your car.
5.6. No, 5.6 standard drinks in the bottle, according to the back. 5.6. Okay. Let's see, what's the percentage? It's 9.5% alcohol. So they probably set that to avoid some level of tax levies, excise tax. At 5.6 standard drinks, I think you can have like 2 in the first hour and then 1 every hour thereafter. So I should have been able to have 3 and still be a legal driver. And so I'm only a little bit over the limit, according to the number on this label. And the number on this label is as good as a lawyer, as far as I'm concerned.
Excellent. I'm pleased for you.
This is legal advice, this it little legal icon. Advice.
That and the internet together are legal advice. They're going to lower the drinking limits, I hope so. Anyway, whatever.
I also hope so. I think it's 0.8 now, and it's going to get under 0.5, and I don't think there's any question about that.
Thank you, Vikram, for joining us. This was informative, and I'm glad you could speak so candidly.
Oh, I've been asked, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've been asked about an update on the Pancake Fund. Here's an update on the Pancake Fund. I regret the whole thing, and I feel like a prick. That's your update on the Pancake Fund. But thank you very much for the people who have funded the Pancake Fund. I also thought it was amusing, but I didn't mean any offense by the whole thing. It was obviously a joke, and it turns out it was actually a bit of a mean joke. But Pancake Fund fully funded. Just by the way, that's all I'm saying. Might be a joke, but it was also successful.
Was I just not listening to you for a while? Did you mention? I don't even know what you're talking about.
The Pancake Fund, my man. We IPO'd today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was really successful. Okay, that was not a very successful apology, though.
No, it's about as successful as any apology you make.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'm going to turn off the stream now. Thank you once again, Vikram. Good luck with Mega and finding all the money that you possibly can. And I hope there is no legal trouble in the future. And I hope everything is smooth.
Fairy tale, but okay, I'll take that. Okay, guys, thanks.
Thank you.
See ya.
Fish and chaps. This show is canceled. Beep.